I'm Brian Lehrer. This is my Daily Politics Podcast from WNYC Studios. It's Monday, October 25th. The Democrats are on the verge of finalizing the Build Back Better or Human Infrastructure bill. Most of the coverage is focusing on what's getting cut out of the bill, and we'll talk about that too, because that's part of these endgame negotiations. But let's not forget to talk about what's in it and how transformative it could be, because remember President Biden's goal, the biggest leap since the 1960s in how government helps to fight the decline of the middle class and income inequality. In a video to constituents over the weekend, the leader of the House Progressive Caucus, Congresswoman Pramila Jayapal of Washington State, reminded everyone what they're fighting for that was in the bill proposed by the president himself before Senator Manchin and Senator Sinema started chopping it down.
We have to do everything possible to deliver paid leave, childcare, pre-K, community college, climate action, health care, affordable housing, home care, and a roadmap to citizenship for immigrants. The president knows that progressives are fighting for these priorities.
According to NBC News, over the weekend, things likely to be in the final package include universal pre-K, that's huge by itself, 4 weeks of paid family leave, welcome America to the world of other modern industrialized countries, elder care provisions, dental care vouchers, increases to Pell Grants for making college affordable for more people, and an extension of the child tax credit, which sponsors say is already cutting child poverty in half in the first months of its trial run, and funding to fight climate change. Would that add up to a new deal? Great society? Would that add up to a great society? Would it be New Deal big? Would it be great society big? That conversation is just beginning. And of course, we have to see the final package. But let's remember to talk about what's in the bill, not just what's coming out of it. With me now, John Nichols, national affairs correspondent for The Nation. He's also a contributing writer for The Progressive. And coming from that point of view, some of his recent articles in The Nation include one called Biden Should Be Selling His Plan, Not Compromising Away Its Promise, and Bernie Sanders Shows Democrats How to Deal with Joe Manchin. John, thanks for coming on. Welcome back to WNYC.
Brian, it's great to be with you.
First, you get to say if you agree with the premise of my intro or not. If those things being reported still in the bill are still in the bill, will it be a historically progressive set of reforms? Will it be New Deal big, Great Society big?
Yeah, it's pretty close to that. If indeed, you know, what you're talking about remains in, and that's really the battle here. Now, I think it's important to understand at a baseline, if they do the physical infrastructure bill and some substantial portion of the human infrastructure bill, for lack of a better way of referring to it, this is going to be one of the biggest investments in this country, both physical and human, that we have seen since Lyndon Johnson and the Great Society. I think that's really the more relevant comparison to the New Deal. The New Deal was so sweeping and coming at so many levels that I'm not sure this quite compares. In fact, I'd say it definitely doesn't. But if you want to do a comparison to the Great Society, which remember, gave us Medicare, Medicaid, the war on poverty, and significant progress legislatively on civil rights and a host of other issues, yeah, I think that's a fair comparison.
Let's talk about some of the specifics. There seems to be an interesting last-minute public tug of war between Senator Bernie Sanders and Senator Joe Manchin over the Medicare expansion proposals in the bill. This involves adding vision care, dental care, and hearing aids to Medicare, the health insurance program for people over 65. Manchin is reportedly negotiating those things out over price concerns, Senator Kyrsten Sinema too. Bernie Sanders says it's still in there. Do you know what's going on there, substantively or politically?
Yeah, I can tell you politically for sure, but let's start with substantively. There is little question that the vast majority of Democrats in the House and the Senate, as well as President Biden, would like to keep it in. That doesn't mean that only Manchin and Sinema want to take it out. There's a portion of, I guess, what you would call centrist, some would call corporate, Democrats in the House and the Senate who think it's just too expensive. And so they are pushing against it, both on a cost, you know, complaint, and also, frankly, because there's a lot of lobbying circling all around this. There is a likelihood, unfortunately, I think, that it's going to get cut back. The question is how much and what might be lost. And, you know, one of the things we're hearing is a suggestion that the dental is especially expensive. And so it, when you talk about the negotiations right now, you have this prospect that you might get vision and hearing, but not dental, or you might get, you know, some other combination. Also, there's talk right now, and I think this is very alive and very much a part of the debate, of giving a voucher to seniors who could then use maybe an $800 voucher that they could use to buy some sort of insurance, additional insurance that would get them vision, dental, hearing, something like that. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of where the play is right now politically. Now, the political fight is frankly a much deeper one. And that's between, you know, frankly, two different visions of what the Democratic Party is about. One vision is, you know, basically it tinkers around the edges, you know, maybe fixes and improves programs a little bit, but doesn't, you know, go big and go bold. The other vision is that it is time to for the Democratic Party, when it has governing power, and this is obviously the Sanders vision, to really implement a set of major changes that people are going to feel, that they're going to know occurred. And from a political standpoint, what Sanders argues is, and I think that Biden understands this, is that if you do deliver vision, dental, and hearing care under Medicare, if you expand many of these other programs, the people are going to feel that very quickly and have a sense of what it means to have Democrats in power.
Yeah, that's really interesting. And you've seen that Biden's approval rating percentages are down in the 40s. They can always bounce back from that range, as we've seen with Ronald Reagan and Bill Clinton, for example. But it looks from the reporting on the polls like he's losing enthusiasm among the Democratic base, some people in the Democratic base, because he isn't going far enough or fighting hard enough for these things as it appears to them. But he's also losing the support of many suburban independents who thought that, you know, Trump was too right wing, but now think Biden is going too hard left. You're obviously coming from a progressive position at The Nation, but many Democrats are concerned that they will lose those recent gains in the suburbs in next year's midterm elections, and Republicans will actually take control of Congress because they see Biden, these independents, see Biden and their local Democratic Congress people as spending too much. That could happen even as base turnout declines because not enough progress. Mm-hmm. I'm curious how you see the politics of keeping Congress in relation to this bill.
Well, you summed it up very well. Look, it's hard. Midterm elections are referred to as cursed for the party in power. And the pattern throughout history is very, very strong. But one of the interesting dynamics to put into this pattern is the question of whether people have a sense that you are delivering. And if there is that sense, your chances in the midterms improve. And so right now, the Democrats are very, very vulnerable. There's no question. And you can find a pundit or a pollster that'll tell you going one route will destroy you. And then another pollster just across the street will tell you, nope, going that route's the only thing that'll save you. So you're getting a lot of, you know, conflicting information, conflicting ideas that come in here. What I can tell you is history is somewhat instructive on this. When Democrats are in power and they don't deliver in a big way, they tend to suffer some of their worst setbacks. And there was a sense with Bill Clinton, whether people agree with this or not, simple reality, there was a sense with Bill Clinton that in his first 2 years in power, he tended to veer much more toward Wall Street, much more toward a corporate position. He didn't deliver in the ways that an awful lot of people wanted him to. And you saw this real collapse, I think, related to trade issues. And in 1994, disastrous result for the Democrats. Similarly, when Barack Obama came in, while he did a lot on healthcare, and you heard a lot about the Affordable Care Act, there was deep frustration as regards the economy, you're coming off the Great Recession. And a real sense that the Democrats in power had not done enough to address the economic pain of that moment. And again, in 2010, you see a huge drop off in Democratic vote in a situation where a tremendous setback. So I would err, and obviously, you know, you're pointing out my political sentiments, and that's fair to do. I would err on the side of saying that if the Democrats don't deliver in a big way, if they don't, you know, show that they can govern, their chance of a drop-off, one that would be very, very damaging to them, is more severe. And so while I do think chasing after the suburban voters matters, and it's a part of the calculus, I think what you have to put into this mix is this core question. Are suburban voters really disinclined to vision, hearing, and dental for Medicare? Are they really disinclined to paid family and medical leave? Are they really disinclined to, you know, extension of caregiving for seniors and people with disabilities? My sense is that the answer on that is that they're not disinclined, that if the Democrats deliver in a big way, if they actually come down with something and it can be felt in relatively short order, that these will be appealing programs, and they will have appeal both in urban areas and suburban areas and rural areas. And the final factor I'll put into this mix is, while we're talking a lot about what Biden is doing and what the Democrats are doing now, we do have to keep in the mix the reality of Donald Trump. And he is such a hovering presence in our politics that even in a midterm election, he may still be a factor as regards how suburban voters and swing voters cast their ballots.
In other words, don't let the Republicans take control of Congress because they might make Donald Trump Speaker of the House.
Well, that's been suggested, yes.
Yes, which is rumored because you don't actually have to be a member of Congress to be Speaker of the House. We did a segment on that recently with these rumors that the Republicans might in fact install Donald Trump as Speaker of the House, and he has not been discouraging that speculation if they were to take the majority. John, there was this meeting yesterday, as I'm sure you know, a negotiating session that included President Biden plus Manchin and other people. On CNN State of the Union yesterday, House Speaker Nancy Pelosi told Jake Tapper that Manchin, who of course is from the coal-producing state of West Virginia, will get his way on at least one big climate thing, eliminating the Clean Energy Performance Program, known by its initials, CEPP, but she also said a deal is just about done. Listen.
I think we're pretty much there now.
You think you have a deal now?
We're almost there. It's just the language of it. But it will be, it will not offend, shall we say, the concern that Senator Manchin had about the CEPP. But nonetheless, the point is to reach a goal. And the president's goals of reaching the emissions, the pollution, and all the rest.
Speaker Pelosi with Jake Tapper on CNN, John Nichols, the nation's national affairs correspondent with us. John, are you familiar enough with the CEPP, Clean Energy Performance Program, to say why Pelosi would have singled that out on TV as a concession to Joe Manchin?
I'm familiar enough to tell you it's what Joe Manchin doesn't want. The bottom line is that there's a lot of initiatives related to climate in this proposal. And this one, CEPP does is that it uses a lot of pressure on existing power plants to stop using fossil fuels, or at least stop using coal, and to move to cleaner energy. And obviously, that's something that Manchin doesn't particularly like for a variety of reasons. You know, he is referred to as the senator from the fossil fuel industry, even more so than many Republicans. So he's put a lot of pressure on the administration in that regard. And I've got to tell you, this is really where these negotiations, I think, get very, very dangerous politically. Remember, we were talking about, you know, both the practical realities of this and the political realities. And I've got a piece going up in The Nation, I think it'll be today or tomorrow, about where I really did a deep dive into the polling data on kind of what generated young people 18 to 29, and particularly even 18 to 24, to come vote in 2018 and 2020. Climate is a huge part of that. Mm-hmm. I can't begin to emphasize how I think a lot of Democratic leadership folks who are in their 70s and their 80s don't fully recognize the extent to which climate is a motivating issue. And so that's why you're hearing Nancy Pelosi and Joe Biden say, oh, we're going to take this element of the plan out, but we're going to try and do something else. The truth of the matter is, if you take this element out, you really undermine and slow down the ability of the United States to meet basic climate goals. And that is going to be pointed out. It already has been pointed out by a lot of environmentalists. And so this is a dangerous territory that these negotiations are getting into. And if you give Joe Manchin what he wants, you may get a plan, right? As Nancy Pelosi says, but you may get a plan that faces a lot of criticism and perhaps, again, I'm cautious about saying this, perhaps even some resistance in the House from some of your more progressive members.
Is there an argument for doing climate separately, that there's a messaging challenge that has complicated the whole thing for Biden and the Democrats? Because without climate, it's a social safety net bill. It's a social supports bill. They could sell it as, the universal pre-K and keep grandma out of a nursing home with more mm-hmm. funding for home health aides bill. And it's more straightforward. Child care and elder care and some of the other health things. With climate in it, it starts to seem like the kitchen sink.
Well, that's, I understand the theory, and when you say it that way, it sounds very logical. Here's the complexity of it. We don't have the congressional circumstance that Franklin Roosevelt had during the New Deal, or that Lyndon Johnson had in the initial stages of particularly the Great Society. What you've got is an incredibly narrowly divided House and Senate. The notion that you're going to bring climate or a number of other issues in a separate measure, that you're somehow going to address it down the line in some other way, is frankly unrealistic.
Over in New Jersey, one early test of this Biden Build Back Better reconciliation, call it whatever you want to call it, bill, as it presumably gets through in the next few days, may come in the two governor's races taking place right now in Virginia and New Jersey. Here's Governor Murphy on MSNBC this morning, getting ready to receive Biden, who will speak in the Garden State today.
President Biden is coming in today, not for politics, by the way, but for two very specific agenda items that are important to the country and important to New Jersey. One is expanding pre-K. We're leading the nation in doing that. And the other is infrastructure. In this case, the first step in building at long last the big project that will add rail tunnels under the Hudson River. Those are two examples of many that still resonate deeply with Americans, not just Democrats. And I'm confident that'll continue to be the case.
Governor Phil Murphy on Morning Joe on MSNBC. John Nichols, national affairs correspondent for The Nation with us. We're almost out of time, but you have an article about Murphy as perhaps the most progressive governor in America. And yet, in Jersey, which hasn't elected a Republican statewide since, I think, 2009, that race may be getting closer than Democrats thought it would be, according to the recent reporting. Do you think Biden's presence today helps or hurts?
Well, first off, I find it intriguing that the governor says that the president isn't coming for reasons of politics. I would suspect there's a little bit of reason of politics here. Look, at this point, in the midterms are looking to be close in Virginia and in New Jersey. But most of the evidence is that Murphy is doing better. At least he's got, it seems to be, have a little bit more of a lead, is maybe even a significantly greater lead than what you're seeing in Virginia. And you ask yourself, well, why is that? And I think you heard that in what Murphy just said there. He talked about how New Jersey is leading the way in pre-K and in some of these programs about why the infrastructure program is really, really good for something that people in New Jersey want. My argument in the piece I wrote is first that Murphy has been a pretty effective progressive governor, but also he's really good at communicating about this stuff. And obviously, if he gets beat, I'm wrong. And that wouldn't be the first time I was wrong. But my suspicion is that Murphy will do okay. And one of the reasons for that is that I think he provides a model for how Democrats at the national level ought to be approaching things, which is doing progressive stuff, but also talking about it and explaining it and linking it into people's lives.
John Nichols, national affairs correspondent for The Nation. We'll see what happens as this continues to emerge, and hopefully a deal gets reached and we all see what's in it, and then everybody can judge it for themselves in the next few days. John, thanks a lot. Brian Lehrer, a Daily Politics podcast, is an excerpt from my live daily radio show, The Brian Lehrer Show, on WNYC Radio, 10 a.m. to noon Eastern Time, if you want to listen live at WNYC.org. Thanks for listening today. Talk to you next time.